I'm Taryn Ward.
I'm Stephen Jones.
And this is Breaking the Feed, social media beyond the headlines.
We're taking a closer look at the core issues around social media, including the freedom of expression, or free speech, as it's sometimes known, to better understand the role that social media plays in our everyday lives and society.
Last episode, we looked at social media and elections and thought about how political candidates can use social media as part of campaign strategy, the limits imposed by governments, especially in the U.S., and how these differ to the limits platforms impose. We looked specifically at X, formerly known as Twitter, and Truth Social, and over the next two episodes, we'll look at Tucker Carlson on X, with an especially close look at his recent interview with Vladimir Putin and a discussion of X's decision to suspend Alexei Navalny's widow's account on the platform, and of course, what this all means for free speech in the era of social media. This recent interview was featured on X in a big way. Viewed more than 200 million times and shared more than 300,000 times, it's unclear how much of an impact Elon Musk's directly sharing the link with the caption, "Watching it now," had. But given that Carlson only has 12.3 million followers of his own, and most of his videos on X have somewhere between 1 and 30 million views, with most of those coming in somewhere between 3 and 15 million, it seems fair to say it was substantial. Musk has shared Carlson's content and updates about Carlson before and since, including Musk's claim that while Carlson's television show had single-digit million viewers, views for his episodes on X now exceed the population of the United States.
Possibly because people were ashamed to watch Fox News internationally, but they are used to looking at Twitter. And so it does provide him with a newer, bigger audience, right? Yeah, the impact of Musk. Well, I mean, they both have a history of race-baiting misogyny and transphobia, homophobia in their comments online and on air. So it's not surprising, perhaps, that Elon Musk shares Carlson's output. The concerning part for me is that not only does Musk share him, which he has every right to do, but he actually controls the network and how the algorithm distributes, right? And I think we'll probably get into that a bit later. But that's the problem. He's just not a citizen sharing things which he found interesting, which you or I may also choose to do. It would probably not be Tucker Carlson in my case, but whatever it is. But different rules apply to him in the way that he can manipulate the online world.
Yeah, I think there are a few important points to pick up on there. So I think, as you said, Musk isn't only political when it comes to Carlson. So, you know, he said publicly on X that he's not ever signed a deal of any kind with Carlson. You know, that's all fine. But, you know, he's recently weighed in on everything from hormonal birth control, alleged censorship in the U.S., the southern border in the U.S., and the benefits he sees in changing the state of incorporation from Delaware to Texas. So, you know, pretty wide variety of issues there. And to be clear, as you said, Musk is a private citizen. You know, he's exercising his right to free speech generally, which we have no objection to. And his ability to say what he likes on his privately owned social network. And remember, these two things are not the same. But here's the difference. As you rightly pointed out, Musk controls how content is distributed. He decides which posts and comments are more or less widely available, not just by weighing in and letting the algorithm do the heavy lifting, which he could do given his 173 million plus followers, but by having the ability to make rules that suit him and even individual decisions about which accounts are banned or reinstated. And by the way, this isn't some random conspiracy theory. Musk has publicly stated that he'll let the public decide whether an account should be reinstated, which demonstrates that he does, in fact, have this ability and control. And his weighing in on banning accounts or content that offends him is widely talked about in the tech world. This isn't sort of whispers in corridors. This is something that people talk about openly, and they make decisions about what they post and whether to tag him and how to speak about him and Tesla and Starlink and whatever else he's working on Twitter and other platforms. That's a lot of power for one person to have over a platform that is perhaps the most political of all the social media platforms currently available. And some might argue, in fact, it's something that approaches an absolute power.
And I remember a quote about absolute power corrupting absolutely. Isn't that how that goes? I mean, there's a lot in there. There's a lot in there to unpack. I mean, I think this a willingness and ability to manipulate willy-nilly without even the cover of a Meta Supreme Court who's on the network and who's off is a bit of a problem, particularly given who he's let back on. Some extremely unpleasant individuals that were banned from Twitter for pretty good reasons. It wasn't even easy back in the day to get banned on Twitter. They were banned for very good and valid reasons. And that's a bit of a problem. But what he does do, of course, is, you know, quite famously this weekend, I guess, a parody account, Liam Nissan, was widely talked about online, that he had pointed out in one of his tweets that Elon walked around on the southern border race baiting with his cowboy hat on backwards. I actually have no idea whether he was wearing his cowboy hat on backwards. I couldn't bring myself to go back and look at the videos he shared of himself walking around. But there was another issue, right? That this guy also outed that Elon had a second account for self-pleasure on Twitter. He would auto-tweet himself and say nice things about, he had another name, that he would say nice things about the Elon account, and they would mutually boost one another, and this guy called it out, right? I mean, that's a level of narcissism which is troubling in and of itself, isn't it? Like, seriously. Well, what's your take, Taryn, on someone doing that?
Oh, I mean, I think there are lots of stories about Elon Musk doing things like this. I don't know how many of them are true or not, but the one that I think is the strangest is one where he tweeted as his 2-year-old child. So he was having some sort of, you know, family conflict at the time with the mother of this child. And there were sort of tweets from this account talking about what a great dad he was and things like that. And then, of course, there are allegations that it was actually Elon's account. And he accidentally tweeted something from his own account that sounded a lot like something that was coming from this account. And, you know, I don't know if any of these are true or not, but I think it is concerning that somebody would be banned for making the claim, even if it's false. And that's especially true given his position as a supposed free speech absolutist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, another claim that I saw at the weekend was that he doesn't actually, the Twitter team don't actually allow community notes, you know, this thing that he came up with, so that if a post is considered unfair or untrue, your community can sort of like self-moderate. It's so much cheaper for self-moderation than actually paying professionals to do it after all. Yeah, but they don't allow them on his tweets, apparently. This was somebody had tried to community moderate some of the horrible things that he said, and they were not allowed to, which is, again, being able to comment on what you say is fundamental to free speech. And I think that brings me to the main point here. The founding fathers, who in a previous episode, I think the immediately previous episode, I may have been disparaging about, given that they were formerly British citizens who rebelled against the crown. But they had reason, right? They understood corrupt government. It doesn't take a massive leap of imagination to imagine that the colonial governors in the States were not necessarily all good, upstanding chaps. And so they understood corrupt government. Now, how much understanding the actual situation and truth and being able to challenge power, how important that was to a functioning democracy and a functioning nation, right? It's not surprising, therefore, that the first thing that they amended in the Constitution was this right to, you know, free speech. Because you're supposed to be able to hold people in power to account. It doesn't mean to say, or it shouldn't mean to say, that you can punch down and say whatever you like about anybody who's weaker than you, and you can essentially, you know, libel and slander them because, A, the law is difficult to enforce, or B, they don't have the money for it. What it means is that you can challenge people in power, people like politicians, people like, well, Putin, people like Tucker Carlson, definitely people like Elon Musk, the richest man in the world who controls an outlet which, as we talked about on our Twitter episodes, became the way that journalists and the public shared current events and news. And it's not the quality of the stories necessarily that make the decision of how far they spread. Now it's the opinions and political attitudes of one man, right? Which is counter to free speech as far as I'm concerned. I'm not an American, but that's my view.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about how views on free speech have evolved even over the past 20 years. And this is something that you and I have talked about, you know, which political party is sort of most aligned with ideals on free speech. And, you know, it's moved, certainly, I think, in the last 20 years, but there's some sense that maybe it's moving again. And it'll be interesting to see sort of, you know, where it lands and how long it stays there. But back to Tucker Carlson and his recent interview. So again, the video on X alone had more than 200 million views, but many people did not watch it. I have friends and colleagues, and I'm sure you do too, on both sides of the political aisle in the US and in Europe, who felt they really had a moral obligation to not watch it. And they weren't alone in having strong feelings about the interview. There were rumors, fueled in part by Musk, that the EU was considering a travel ban for Tucker Carlson because of this interview. And although the EU refuted this claim, a spokesperson did say that they reserved the right to blacklist propagandists, and specifically said that they had the right to blacklist, in particular, any propagandist with a continued track record of information manipulation aimed at undermining the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine. Try saying that five times fast. It's a mouthful. But it's a very specific description that they provide in terms of who they have the right to ban, and one that, depending on your viewpoint, may or may not apply to Tucker Carlson.
It is interesting, right? I mean, I think I first started becoming politically aware and interested really during the tenure of Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, who up until relatively recently was a Republican god, and, you know, I'd never understood it myself, but he was, right? I mean, he was the epitome of the Republican Party. Now he would be a Republican in name only, like so many other people. But he would be spinning in his grave to see people supporting and propagandizing someone like Putin, who I'm sure he would see as a former KGB officer who's trying to resurrect the Soviet Union, not as a communist system, but as a kleptocracy. But a kleptocracy which has 6,000 nuclear missiles pointed at largely, you know, you and me and the people we know all across the Western world. And at somebody who started multiple wars of aggression in the last 20 years, let's not forget that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a national security issue for Europe that Russia right now is presenting a national security threat to the entire European continent through its violence and other activities in Ukraine and other former Eastern Bloc states. And so why wouldn't they do that? I think it would outrage a lot of Americans to hear that that would happen, though. And that worries me a bit, because I think back in the days of Reagan, they wouldn't have been surprised. And I can't believe I'm yearning for the days of Reagan. For crying out loud, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, as you and I have talked about, when it comes to national security concerns, I think Americans' views on free speech can be a little bit different and a little bit, let's say, mixed. I think that's probably the only exception in many ways to a very stretched view of what free speech should encompass. I think something you said there about Reagan was really interesting, because back then it was really people on the left, so very progressive Democrats, who were often accused of being Russian propagandists. And, you know, if you wanted things like universal health care, even when I was a teenager, you know, this idea that people should have access to free health care, or even something, you know, approaching that, you would be accused of being a communist. I certainly was. No, to be fair, I was a vegan, you know, Amnesty International volunteer back then. So there were some other things going on, but it was not uncommon for that accusation to be levied at people who were more left-leaning. And now we have a situation where I think people who are more left or center-left are saying, hold on, wait a minute, we're really concerned about the right's relationship with Russia. It's a really interesting swing and change, and one that sort of mirrors the shift in free speech.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? And I mean, you know, you're waiting for a McCarthy-like figure to rise from the Democratic Party and purge Washington of all these Russian sympathizers. It would be entertaining. I mean, actually, it wouldn't be entertaining, because the whole episode was absolutely awful and unjustifiable. But, you know, The same was true in the UK, of course. The security services had files on British Labour Party politicians because they were socialists and were deeply concerned that they were agents of the former Soviet Union, which was ironic since there were so many high-profile cases of leadership within the security services being high-profile Soviet agents. But this is the case. It was very definitely national security and free speech. These were not left-wing issues, and it's really changed. You know, book burning and banning of books was something that the right would have accused socialists and communists of doing, right?
Yeah.
This has been something which I think as a child and even as through almost all of the years of my adult life, I couldn't have imagined right-wing conservative politicians doing. And it tells me that there's something deeply wrong within their party, because I don't believe those were never the core beliefs. And where have those people gone? Because I don't know that they're in the Democratic Party anymore, and they're certainly in the US and the UK not really a credible third party alternative. So I think that's a bit of a problem for our countries combined.
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting opportunity to ask why. I think, you know, looking at the direction that either party or either sets of parties have taken, even over the last 10 years, is really interesting. And I think it's hard to do because so many of these topics hit soft spots. And so the instinct to not ask why and to just be like, you bad, me good, and sort of shut it down. But I think, you know, the why is really important. And I think, you know, we could talk about this for hours and maybe we'll do another episode on it. But, you know, I think part of this is thinking more deeply about these things and not just scrolling through Twitter and taking anyone's word for it, but really, you know, thinking about it for ourselves and figuring out where our views have shifted and whether it's based on something meaningful or if we're just sort of going with the flow of what our chosen political party sort of tells us. Back to the interview briefly. A few more things I think are worth noting for context purposes before we get into it. If you don't know Tucker Carlson, and I know a lot of people outside of the U.S. don't, he's been a political commentator on the American right, and I think it's fair to say the far right, for decades. You know, from CNN's Crossfire to PBS to MSNBC to Fox News, before his contract was terminated and he relaunched on X, he sort of made the rounds. And for those watching outside of the US, he's widely known within the States as part political commentator, part conspiracy theorist, and longtime wearer of bow ties. And I think few people familiar with his work, including many people within the Republican Party, view him as objective or impartial. That doesn't mean they don't believe what he says, or it doesn't mean that they don't take him seriously in some ways, but I think there aren't that many people who would say that he's out there trying to be objective or neutral in what he says. I don't think Vladimir Putin needs an introduction, but again, just for some helpful background, he served as prime minister or president of Russia since 1999, so a long time. After working as a KGB foreign intelligence officer for 16 years, where he rose to the rank of lieutenant colonel before he resigned. And after that, he of course, started his political career. He served as the director of the Federal Security Service, or FSB, and a secretary of the Security Council of Russia. A lot of experience in the military and government. This is sort of what he does, which I think is important later when he gets into some of the history. Next episode, we'll really get into the interview itself and, of course, everything that happened next, including X's decision to suspend Yulia Navalny's account and what this all means for free speech and expression in the era of social media. In the meantime, we'll post a transcript of this episode with references on our website.
Until next time, I'm Stephen Jones.
And I'm Taryn Ward.
Thank you for joining us for Breaking the Feed, social media beyond the headlines.